You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of TPC. So many huge stories in the news to cover this week, and we're getting to them as quickly as we can. We covered two big ones in the first hour, more to come in the remainder of the show. But I got to tell you, go check out thepoliticalcesspool.org. There on March the 14th, just on Thursday, I posted a video of yours truly, along with Bill Johnson and Paul Fromm, engaged in a very lively discussion. I joined those two very good friends of mine for a particularly fast-paced talk about the National College admission scandal. We also tackled the Tucker Carlson so-called controversy, which we covered tonight during the first hour, and much more. Check it out. The video was masterfully edited and produced by Ken Givadin. I make monthly stops there with Bill and Paul and Ken, and I think each one is better than the last. I told them last month it was the best one yet. This month was the best one yet. We encourage you to check it out. But during that conversation, I had such a good time, and the conversation was so free-flowing and enjoyable that I said, you know, we got this would actually make for incredible content for the Political Cesspool. Now, I could have just played the whole thing from the can, and it would have made for a good installment this hour. But I thought, why not have the man himself on to do it all over again? So that's what we're doing. Our guest this hour, William Johnson. Bill is a successful, very accomplished attorney who's returning this hour to break down the college admission scandal that has also been one of the dominant headlines this week in the news. Bill, how are you?
Hey, pretty good. Thanks for having me on, James.
Always a pleasure. It's been too long since the last time. We've had so much fun with Bill over the years. You know, all of those robocalls that were going on during the Trump campaign, that was produced in-house here by Sam Bushman. Of course, Bill was heavy-handed in that with the scripts and the funding, and we voiced some of them. I mean, that made huge, huge news. Bill, a longtime friend. What a great guy. But yeah, so Bill asked me if I'd heard about this when we actually did the show last week. It was the day; it was just hours after it first broke. And what caught my attention was that two actresses that I knew of, Lori Loughlin, who played Aunt Becky in the Full House series that was so iconic, and then Felicity Huffman, who is William H. Macy, a very great character actor. She played a role in the Desperate Housewives series. They apparently got netted in this sting over this college admissions debacle. And I think one of them paid $15,000 to get their child into school. The other one paid $500,000 to get their child into the college of their choice. But it wasn't particularly hard colleges to get into. Yeah, it wasn't Harvard Law or MIT. It was USC and some of these other colleges. And anyway, but I thought it was interesting, but I couldn't for the life of me understand why so much. I mean, I guess because they were well-known actresses, there was a lot of media attention, but why the law enforcement were going after them so hard. I get it's against the law. It's unethical. You pay a fine. Maybe you lose the scholarship and you get kicked out of college. But the way that the law was going after them, Bill can fill in the blanks, though. So, Bill, here we go. Tell us what was going on with that. Keith Alexander, another Esquire here. He's going to help us this hour. But tell us what was going on and why it's of interest to our people.
Well, the media has been saying that this is a story that just keeps on giving. It writes itself. And there's so many permutations out there related to it. It's just enthralling. And I was so enamored with the story because it is taking place right in my backyard. I mean, USC is just a few miles from my office. And this fraudster singer, he's from Newport Beach. I used to go there all the time for my clients, which is about 45 minutes away. So it's really hits home to me. But it's interesting because it goes to the very heart of our youth educational system. So many of these wealthy people have been gaming the system to get their kids into these schools. And like you say, the biggest, victim or perpetrator or school that the school calls itself a victim, but it's really kind of a participant is USC. And like you said, USC is not that difficult of a school to get into, but it seems like every one of these families, so many of them were touched by USC. And in fact, you mentioned these two stars that were in there. At the day after it broke, it turns out that one of the daughters was on a yacht with one of the USC.
I saw that.
And see, that fellow, his name was Rick Caruso. We were young lawyers together in the same law firm, and we were right next to each other. And he went to Pepperdine Law School, which is just not a very good law school in here. So I guess he didn't pay to get in. But I was thinking, you know, why in the heck is he in this law firm? Because this was the biggest law firm in the nation at the time. And I thought, he's kind of stupid. And, you know, we were just young lawyers right next to each other. But it turns out someone told me, says, well, his dad founded National Rent-A-Car. So I said, oh, there you go. He got his job. The law firm wanted wanted him for a client. And Rick Cruz,
money talks.
Yeah, he's done great things for himself, you know, because he's been building all these malls around the country. He uses daddy's money to magnify it. But I remember when I was promoting Ron Paul, I called Rick Caruso and said, hey, Rick, why don't you be the host for us at my house? Because Ron Paul was coming to my house. Why don't you be the host for that? And he said, well, I'm supporting Mitt Romney. And so he didn't want to do it. But the thing is, there's just so much intrigue going along here. And there's most people know the story, so I just cut to some of the kind of the side stories. It's people in our movement, and when I say our movement, I'm a white nationalist. But we always say that they're selective and go after us, and they don't go after others. Well, I can tell you, this USC scandal or this college scandal is definitely an example of selective enforcement. The very last person they went after was the co-chair of a major law firm. His name is Gordon Kaplan. The law firm is Wilkie, Farr, and Gallagher, and I've dealt with him over the years. And so if you read the testimony and the complaint that was written there, that after everything was all in place, they had this Gordon Kaplan on the line, who's a lawyer and head of this major law firm. And so they wired this Singer guy, the fraudster that perpetrated all of this. And the first conversation, they were just tapping and listening in. And then they got the Singer guy to plead guilty. And so they wired him. And you can see this Gordon Kaplan talking to this Mr. Singer. And they're talking about how to get their daughter going back to go to the West Coast to take the bar exam. And the excuse is, well, he can go to a bat mitzvah or a bar mitzvah, do all this kind of stuff. They're all talking Jewish stuff because they're both Jews. And but the point I wanted to make is that this Gordon Kaplan was the last one that they snagged. And it was just in December that his daughter went out to California to take the exam. And this was so late in the game that they even had the police turn out and in like one of these vans that are, you know, with, you know, flowers on the back so they could, you know, pretend that there's a flower shop and take account of it and arrest him. But the reason why they did that is because the prosecuting attorney wanted to get another lawyer. So that's why they focused on him. So that was selected, of course, against this lawyer.
All right, hold on right there. Bill Johnson, Esquire. Very accomplished attorney in Southern California. He's got all the insights on this. Keith Alexander, another lawyer, wants to chime in on this. We're going to get to it, and we're going to tell you why it's of importance to this audience when we continue. Stay tuned.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. Then you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
Being there with your child and being there for your child are two completely different things. One denotes a simple presence, which is a start, but can also be accomplished by someone other than you.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
See, that sheep did a fine job of being there with the child, but it didn't do a very good job of being there for the child. Now listen to the difference an involved parent can make.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
I'm not very good at algebra, but do you have any English questions? Because I done real good in English.
Oh, Mom.
Okay, let's take a look.
Okay, so the algebra problem didn't get solved, but something better happened. Mom was there for her child. And when you're really there, they'll know how much you care. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Folks, I kid you not, it was a conversation so nice, we're having it twice. Just a few days ago, earlier this week, I joined Bill Johnson, Paul Fromm, can give it in there on YouTube to talk about this. It was a frolicking and freewheeling conversation, high energy. I thought so much of it that I invited Bill after the fact to come on and let's do it again here on the radio tonight. But what was going on, of course, was there was this college admission scandal where parents were basically paying for their kids to get into these schools of choice. And it was a pretty well-orchestrated scheme here. You had this guy, Singer, up, I believe he was in Philadelphia, somewhere up in the Northeast, and he was taking the money, and then as a result of that money, there would be somebody at the proctoring station to help doctor their ACT, SAT scores, and then it even got so convoluted that they were awarded sports scholarships, perhaps for one example, on the rowing team, and they would Photoshop pictures of these girls rowing as if they were going to compete on these boats. And of course, once they got into college, they would fake an injury or whatever had to happen because they weren't athletes at all, but they would still be in at that point. So it was a pretty detailed scheme. And Paul Fromm was asking the question, well, how did this work? Do people just go and, you know, offer bribes? I mean, somebody would turn them in. Well, of course, this was all a word of mouth type of thing. I mean, this was only for the insiders. This was a need to know thing. And if you were in the know, you would know. But otherwise, you wouldn't be part of this. And in any event, what happened was somebody rolled over on the guy running it. Some guy got nabbed and he ratted, and then they got the guy that was a part of all of this. But also what was going on was he set it up as, I believe, as Bill told me last week, a 501c3 organization, and people were sending in this bribe money and then getting tax deductions. So it's like the Al Capone thing. It wasn't all the murders he did that got him arrested in the end. It was tax evasion. And so that's what actually brought this whole scheme down, was got the government so hot for him, was there was some tax fraud going on. But we got to toss it back to Bill. But before we do that, Keith, take it away. Why is this of interest to you? Because when I told you that we were going to have Bill Johnson on to talk about this, you perked up like, you lit up like a Christmas tree. Let's just say that.
Okay. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because I was a victim of affirmative action back in the day when I was applying to law school. I was trying to get into Vanderbilt Law School. And apparently, this was 1973, affirmative action was ensconced and well in place at that time. I didn't suspect it at the time, but now I know what has happened. That's just one example of the 800-pound gorilla in the living room. Affirmative action is the primary unfairness that plagues college admissions, particularly selective colleges and universities and professional schools. You'll never find an expose about that. This qualifies because this goes under the category heading of rich white people. Now, also, we could be picayunish and say it's basically rich Jewish people. If you look at the last names of most of these people, they all seem to be members of the tribe. For example, Singer. Singer is a typical Jewish name. Never did you realize in your childhood when your mother was sewing clothes on that Singer sewing machine that she was supporting Jewish power and influence, but that was part of it. But I also found out, I read an article, Bill, in ProPublica, a publication, that Jared Kushner, through his father, got into Harvard through similar tactics. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I did, but to address your issue regarding affirmative action, there was an article that I read that was quite interesting. Some big old fat black gal that was wanting to get to school, she was all upset and threatened to file a lawsuit because she felt that she was cheated because she didn't, you know, she's still waiting to hear from her first choice. She got into the University of Chicago, but she's still waiting to get into her first choice. She's afraid she might not be able to do it because of these rich white people jumping ahead of her. And I'd like to see what her ACT scores or SAT scores or grades were. That she was a typical example of affirmative action and getting into the University of Chicago, which is one of the best schools in the nation, and she still thinks she still hates whitey.
She's oppressed as a minority because she only got into the University of Chicago, and she probably didn't deserve to get into a Chicago Knight Law School on her own merits.
Underscores a bigger problem. I went to Harvard Law School, and the people that were there, they were not impressive from a moral perspective. And I can see that this type of scandal, where these people that have no moral anchor or compass are getting into these schools, captains of industry and government agents are not going to want to hire these people that go to these elite schools anymore because they're lacking the necessary moral fabric that these students that go to our Christian schools get. And like, I mean, we have a lot of wonderful Christian schools with a great deal of kids that come out with excellent credentials. And if they were to, you know, if they were to cheat, you know, they're cheating to get into schools. Like when their pastor asks them if they attend a church, they say yes, but in reality, they were looking at their iPhone during the sermon. You know, that's the biggest cheat that they would do. So we're seeing now that recruiters are going to these Christian schools, these white schools, these schools that are a lesser tier for prestige to hire people, and it's going to hurt these Ivy League schools in the long run. I can tell you that.
Well, I don't know what all is happening on that, but what I can tell you is happening in Memphis is that these silk stocking law firms, these big law firms that handle corporate business and securities transactions and tax matters and whatnot, seem to be hiring a disproportionate number of women and blacks, and the black males tend to be homosexuals, quite frankly. And, I don't know why that is, but that's what I see boots on the ground here in Memphis.
That's interesting. But we call, in Los Angeles, we call them white shoes law firms. We don't say silk stocking law firms. But in any event, the point that James made about someone snitching on them, this was another Jewish financier. He was captured by the Securities and Exchange Commission for doing what was called pump and dump, pumping up stock so that the prices go up and then dumping them secretly and making a big profit. So they caught him. His name is Maury Tobin. And they captured him, he said, and they were going to sentence him. And he says, "Have I got a deal for you? You cut me a deal."
Maury Povich.
So he told everybody. He told all this scandal that got the Boston District Attorney investigating. But he is
get. He is so hated right now in Los Angeles that when he comes for sentencing, I bet you it's going to backfire. He's not going to get a cut a deal. He's going to get a stricter sentence for squealing everybody out.
He's going to be the Bernie Madoff of lawyers, see, because, you know, Bernie Madoff didn't damage even a tenth as many people as Michael Milken. But Bernie Madoff became much more notorious because most of Madoff's victims were members of the tribe, where most of Milken's victims were not.
Well, I'll tell you this, guys. I feel a little left out. I'm the only one without a law degree here on the panel this hour. But I will tell you, as much media attention as this college admission scandal has received, I guarantee you there's not another radio show in the world that has given it the insight and the coverage that we have. Would you agree with that, Bill?
Yeah, it's got a lot of coverage, a lot of coverage. But also because so many of these people are so well known in their industry, and their work is, their approach to this scandal is so outrageous. Like, for example, Mr. and Mrs. Abbott, their daughter got in as a scandal, and their spokesman was their son sitting on the front porch of his Park Avenue estate, townhouse, smoking a blunt, explaining, well, everybody has the right to go to school. My sister should be able to go to school. So, and then you have this actress's daughter that gives her press release from the yacht of Rick Caruso. It's just a
story. And Rick Caruso, you were cutting out earlier. Rick Caruso is on the, what, board of directors of USC, or is he the president?
Trustees. He's one of the trustees USC.
Well, actually, he kicked her off the yacht after she got implicated in this scandal. They sent her home. She was on spring break with him. We got to take a quick break. Bill Johnson, attorney Bill Johnson, with us for the full hour. We'll be right back with him. Don't go anywhere.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Brenton Tarrant is facing murder charges in the deaths of 50 people gunned down in mass shootings at two New Zealand mosques. He stood silently in court. Tarrant was arrested 36 minutes after the shootings in a car which police say was carrying improvised explosive devices. Police Commissioner Mike Bush.
At this moment, only one person has been charged in relation to these attacks. I will not be saying anything conclusive until we are absolutely convinced as to how many people were involved.
President Trump has vetoed a resolution to overturn his emergency declaration on the border with Mexico.
Congress has the freedom to pass this resolution, and I have the duty to veto it, and I'm very proud to veto it.
His declaration now faces override votes and a series of lawsuits. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Alaruth, the Capitalist Evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FortumResources.com. That's Fortum, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
Parts of the Midwest are being swamped by a dangerous combination of heavy rain and melting snow. WSAW-TV reporter Gerald Ballard.
The village of Plover says they were prepared for a flood. They just didn't expect this much water.
The area was not flooded at all, and just like snapping your fingers, all of a sudden we had a wall of water.
Many residents were told to evacuate their homes as early as 2 in the morning. The village turning their municipal building into an emergency evacuation shelter, and several roads had to be closed.
Right when we think we are at the tip of things and have things under control, all of a sudden a new area is breaking out with respect to flooding.
April the giraffe has once again given birth in front of a large YouTube audience. The Animal Adventure Park in Harpersville, New York, says April gave birth to a healthy male calf. More than 300,000 people watched it live. This is April's
fifth calf, and the second for her and her mate, Oliver. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Oh, yeah, oh, wanna be by my side. Oh, yeah, oh, now it's finally time.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
I got to admit that this hour of radio is living up to my expectations based upon the conversation I had with Bill Johnson, Paul Fromm, and Ken Gividen on YouTube earlier this week. Be sure to check out that video at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But this is incredible insight on a very big national story. I would say one of the top three national stories this week, along with the shooting in Christchurch, Tucker Carlson, Trump vetoing the border state of emergency, all of that. I mean, this was a big one. And here's Bill Johnson, this high-powered corporate attorney in Los Angeles who has the insight, who knows some of these players, who is well aware at the epicenter of this whole thing, giving you opinion and analysis and commentary on our radio program tonight, the likes of which that of all of the national covers that has been bestowed upon this story, they haven't touched the ins and outs that Bill is covering tonight. Now, we're going to spend one more segment on this, and I'm going to toss it back to Keith, who will toss it back to Bill. And then in the last segment of this hour, we're going to talk about the SPLC firing Morris Steeves. That'd be like you firing me from TPC, Keith. I mean, Morris founded the SPLC. We'll talk about that in the last segment. We want to spend one more segment on this and tell us why, Keith, and toss it back to Bill.
Well, No Mo is big news, I guess, but he's basically just been a figurehead for a long time. Let's get back to the college admission scandal. It would really be interesting if they held the college administrators who are on the a part of this whole, an indispensable part of this whole scheme, to the same type of standards they hold coaches and athletic departments. In other words, lack of institutional control, and they lose their jobs, and there are penalties levied against the colleges. That would really be an interesting development. But, you know, yeah. Bill, I look back at the guys that I have known. I knew, for example, a lawyer that I used to practice with that had a father who was Skull and Bones at Yale, and his son went to Yale, didn't have that distinguished a background, really, in a lot of ways. He got in as an athlete, supposedly as a football player. He was on the football team, but was no great shakes. And in high school, in a regular public high school here in Memphis, he went up to Yale, stayed on the team about 2 weeks, then quit, but kept his scholarship all the way through. So this stuff has been going on for a long time. That was in the 70s. Yeah. You know, you can probably look back among your acquaintances and find other cases. You know, I hadn't even thought about that before. And then I said, you know, this guy was a beneficiary of the same type of string pulling that that is being exposed in this so-called scandal, which, you know, we all have known that this type of stuff was going on, but it's really kind of interesting.
It's particularly egregious in the sports arena because the sporting coaches do have a lot of power to gain admissions for their select group of students. Like, one of these guys that was indicted was Yale's tennis coach, Gordon Ernst, and he was the Obama's tennis coach. He was Michelle Obama's personal tennis coach. And then, you know, and then there's just a whole lot of these athletes' coaches that were indicted. There's a USC has had the Donna Heinel, who was a very pretty woman's coach, and she has two kids. And I looked at her, I felt so sad for her. And then I see that her spouse is another woman, and she's prominent as a member of the gay and lesbian collegiate athletic community. So, you know, then all of these.
Let me make this observation real quickly. I think that the athlete thing is going to be heavily weighted towards women admittees because of Title IX. They have to have all these women's sports so they get the number of scholarships equal with the number of men. And men's, of course, has this, you know, football, NCAA football, where you have 85 scholarships. So it'd be a lot easier to sneak in a ringer that doesn't really contribute in women's sports than in men's sports.
That's true, because if you look at the coaches that were indicted, they were mostly women's coaches. Like, for example, the coach that started all, the Yale coach, a black man by the name of Meredith, he was the one that first wore the wire and got everybody convicted, and he tried to get $400,000 out of this this Maury day trader that was being indicted, and he was the woman's soccer coach. And then you have this Ali Khoshalian, some sort of Middle Eastern guy. He was the USC woman's soccer coach. And then you have the Laura Janke. She was the woman's soccer coach at USC. And then the
all of these coaches, Bill, when the parents who were paying for their kids to get in, they paid this ringleader. The coaches get a little taste of that action too, is what you're saying.
Yeah, they get. This Mr. Singer was generous. He spread the bribe money around. He kept most of it for himself, but he greased the palms of these coaches, and it's just a big scandal. And I don't know where it's gonna play out.
Well, I think this is interesting, Bill. It's so much that there are more scholarships for female athletes than there are female athletes that actually play the sports. I know here in the South, for example, almost every school in the SEC gives scholarships to field a women's field hockey team. They don't even play field hockey in high school. It's just basically that there was a guy named Charles Cavagnaro that was the athletic director at Memphis State, who later became the athletic director at UNLV, who got into a lot of trouble in the 80s when all this was breaking by saying Title IX ought to be called Spikes for Dykes. It's a full employment act for lesbians because – basically they're just getting girls that they think might be lesbians and say, come out to the field hockey team. So that would be really easy to get a woman, a female applicant to a selective college into that. I don't think the men are going to be.
Well, there's more competition.
But yeah, they talk about the front door, the back door, and the side door.
The pendulum has swung so much to the other extreme. I mean, it used to be that for the first Olympics – In 1924, whatever, women couldn't even compete in these distance runnings and things like that because they thought it was too trying on a woman who's supposed to be a wife and a mother. And now our women are not wives and mothers; they're athletes and they're superpower heroes on the movies. And so we really have to go back to respecting our women, and that means we don't watch them participate in wrestling and in all these other contact sports. We have them be wives and mothers. And so I agree with you, Keith, that we got to cut back on these scholarships to the women.
Well, you're right, Bill, that's something we haven't covered. Yes, the new Captain America is a woman. I think it's in one of the big movies out right now, Captain Marvel, whatever she is.
Yeah.
She's the one that's beating up all the guys. Yeah, 100% right. Bill, what a fantastic hour this has been. I mean, you are a great guest. And especially on this topic with you being there in Southern California and having knowing some of these players, this has been incredible. When we come back, then we're going to talk about what's gone on with our friends in Montgomery. But Bill, with just seconds remaining this segment, a final word on this topic to you.
I think that we're going to see these colleges lose a little bit of luster. I mean, USC is stock here, but there's going to be other schools like Wake Forest and Georgetown. I think this is going to tarnish them a little bit.
Do you think that it will result, Bill, in any type of oversight by the government of admissions like they have for athletics, for example? They have an NCAA to investigate what improprieties in selecting and promoting athletes. What are they got? It would be really be wonderful if we got some enhanced oversight of the admissions.
There's rumblings
process
in that effect. I don't particularly think it's wonderful. Anytime you have more regulation by the government, I think that's not a good thing. But yes, there are movements in the Department of Education to have some stricter oversight of this. I would prefer the market to take care of this instead of having the government involved. And I tell you,
the market was taking care of it, Bill.
It will take care of it because their reputation is tarnished because of this scandal, and I don't think we need to have the government involved. But, that's my
opinion. We had a free market apparently going in there where you could get your child into the highest bidder got his child in.
Yeah, but, I mean, illegal activities are going to take place whether the government is involved or not. And so I don't think there should be more oversight, but, that's my take.
That's a good take. That's a good take. I see where Keith's coming tongue in cheek, but Bill's right, of course, in a grand scheme of things. But Well, anyway, so this has been interesting, and this has been an interesting discussion, and I think, again, to say it, I've said it before already, that we have offered a take on this as much as it's been covered in the news that no other organization has done. And that's what you get here at TPC. That's why this is such a special, special show. 15 years now on the radio this year, thanks to people like Bill Johnson, if I do say so myself, these great men out there who have supported us. And, of course, all of you, ladies and gentlemen, in our listening audience, we have done a miraculous thing in this climate, against all odds, to stay here for 15 years. And God willing, we'll be here for a little bit longer if Jesus tarries is coming and our health holds out. We've got a lot more work left in us. We'll be back with Bill Johnson for one more segment. Still a third hour to come, too. Don't go anywhere.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march. That is why we pray. And that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
On the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, welcome back, everybody. What a great show. This show really puts into sharp focus what TPC is all about. Great content, great stories, unique takes on the issues.
You're not going to find it anywhere else.
Not on the AM radio airwaves, that's for sure. And Bill Johnson, great man, great guest, a great attorney. If you could be of benefit of his services. But anyway, we've been talking about, of course, the college admission scandal. I want to transition here in the last segment to the fact that the Southern Poverty Law Center fired Morris Dees. Now, we've been on the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate watch list since 2006, so 2 years after we started the show. It didn't take us long. We've been there for 13 years. We are still there and very proud of that. The SPLC is a very evil organization. It's nefarious. I believe it's satanically inspired. Morris Dees, though, was its founder, so it's interesting that the organization a man founds would fire him, but that's the case. And if you read between the lines, it looks as though there may have been some sexual misconduct, or at least allegations thereof, and what they call quote unquote racial insensitivity, being charged against Morris Dees by people who worked with him at the SPLC. So this is interesting. Kevin McDonald said to me this week he was surprised that allegations of racial insensitivity have been levied upon Morris Dees. Although those allegations, as I told Kevin, don't surprise me as much as you might think. Most people who have had any substantial interaction with diversity are going to have the same understandings of reality that we do. The only difference is whether or not they speak up about it, pretend not to notice it, or do as Morris Dees did and put your finger in the air and see which side is winning and then sell your soul to whichever side is going to make you more rich. As Joe Sobrin put it, who was a guest on this show before his passing, former writer for National Review, in their mating and migratory habits, liberals are indistinguishable from members of the Ku Klux Klan. Deep down in the pit where his heart should have been, I bet Morris Dees is aware of some inconvenient truths. What leads me to believe that? Morris Dees got his start working for George Wallace in 1958. People think that Morris Dees was Jewish, but he wasn't. His parents were Southern Baptists and tenant farmers of cotton in rural Alabama. He got his name, Morris Seligman Dees, in honor of a Jewish friend of the family named Morris Seligman. And so that was where he got his name from. But he was otherwise a legitimate Southerner. To me, this places him among the irredeemable, someone whose sole motivation in life was to get rich no matter how much he harmed his kinsmen. On the other hand, even in this case, I got to say this because I'm honest above all else. I take any accusation coming from a woman in this day and age with a bucket of salt. The accusation alone is enough to condemn a man in this day and age, as we saw with Roy Moore and as we nearly saw with Brett Kavanaugh. Now, I could be wrong, but it wouldn't surprise me if whatever Morris Dees did to get himself fired was either a very mild offense or one that existed purely in the mind of his accusers. Still, if anyone deserves misfortune in life, it's Morris Dees. I'm glad that this happened to him. However, at the end of the day, he is a multimillionaire octogenarian. I don't think he's going to suffer that much. He's going to land on his feet in his final years. He's going to live them in the lap of luxury. Our best hope, though, Bill Johnson, is that this whole incident will somehow further sully the SPLC. I do believe that could happen. Your take on that, and we'll let Keith talk about it.
Well, I think that the Southern Poverty Law Center's reputation is declining dramatically for reasons unrelated to this sex scandal with Morris Dees. And I think it's going down because they just overreached and they've just worn out their welcome. They cried wolf too many times and threw their net too wide to call too many people that their power is diminishing. But see, Morris Dees founded the Southern Poverty Law Center, but he wasn't the first president. I remember the first president was Julian Bond. Do you guys remember Julian Bond? He was a state legislator. And the first time I came into contact with him is, I guess he was really active in the civil rights movement, and I didn't really know that. But I was watching some TV show. It was a skit where he was a light-skinned black man, and it was a comedy sketch, but he was discriminating and being bigoted against all these darker-skinned blacks. And so I thought that was kind of funny, and that he'd be willing to participate in that. That is, the whiter you are, you know, the better you are. The darker you are, the worse you are. And that is true among blacks even now. But Morris Dees ensconced or put Julian Bond in as the first titular head of this, but Morris Dees pulled the strings for years behind that. But what's happened now is that the board of directors are now in control, and they decided that Morris Dees is a liability. But I agree with you. It doesn't matter. He's so old. He doesn't do much anymore anyway, so he'll probably just sit back in his rocking chair and relish in what he's done to destroy Western civilization.
great, what a great comment, Bill. Keep to you.
Well, I see
and
it
truthful.
I see it in much more mundane terms. This is just another Jewish takeover of a Gentile's position in a business. And basically, the SPLC is a business. It reminds me of when I was working at Holiday Inn, when Mike Rose and Roy Weingartner basically made all the Christian fundamentalist founders of Holiday Inn. Kemmons Wilson, Wallace E. Johnson, Boma Corporation, builder of Men in Homes and stuff like this, made all of them walk the plank based on the argument that somehow there was mismanagement because of the first energy crisis, which, you know, made gasoline more expensive and fewer people were taking family vacations and using these hotel or motels at the Cloverleaf that Holiday Inn specialized in. And all of the personnel was made to walk the plank and they were replaced by, what a surprise, Jewish people. So I think that's probably what's going on at the SPLC. They've basically got a huge cash cow now, and now they've taken it over. I don't think there's, if anything, their activities will become more and more offensive and pernicious under this new leadership than under his. But
well, now, Keith, are you telling me that the new leadership is Jewish?
Absolutely.
Okay, because when you were talking about the parents of the USC scandal, as I looked through there, there were some Jews involved there, but most of them were bread and butter Anglo-Saxons, or there was, you know, some Italians in there. But the Jews were not as heavily represented as you made it out to be. So I'm wondering, I don't mean to challenge you on this, but is indeed the new leadership of the Southern Poverty Law Center are Jewish?
Yeah, Mark Potok, Heidi
Well, Mark Potok got cashiered a year
Richard
ago.
Richard Cohen is the...
Yeah, he's the head, and he is.
Yeah,
but
the thing is, all I know is that when it comes down to who's effectively in charge, even with the college admission standard, Peter Singer, what is he, a Southern Baptist or Roman Catholic?
No,
I don't think so.
He was Jewish, and some of them were Jews, like this lawyer, the head of Wilkie Farr and Gallagher, which is a big law firm. That fellow was Jewish. But
well, you're going to find they're the active ingredient. They're what I call the yeast that makes the dough rise in every liberal movement and also in these type of takeover situations. You know, the hostile takeover phenomenon that started in the 70s and whatnot was basically a Jewish invention. You know, and I'll stand by that, okay?
Okay, all right. I don't have any problem with that. Okay. So,
but anyway, I see it as another hostile takeover.
It wasn't like it was a heavily.
It was an insider.
It wasn't
job.
A
it wasn't
heavily Gentile organization to begin with, to be sure. But anyway, I thought Morris Deese's background, Bill, was pretty interesting. That he came from a very rural Southern family, tenant farmers of cotton, Baptist, and then you know, look what he did with his life. I mean, he basically made all of his kinsmen suffer to an extent that
and
you can't
I doubt
even imagine.
If the people that are taking over now had the same demographic
well,
profile
they didn't,
as Morris
well,
Deese.
Well, that's fine, but,
however,
but nevertheless.
I don't see Morris Deese, his actions much different than anybody, any of our people who are in control. I mean, you have the Mitt Romneys of the world. You know,
no, that's a good point. The good
they,
point.
They do the no. same things. And you've got, I mean, this who's that head of the Senate that's married to that Chinese woman? What's his name?
Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell. Yeah.
Mitch McConnell.
Same thing. All of these white people are moving to destroy our race. So Morris Deese was just a little more successful and a little more open and a little more pushy about it. But I don't know that these other guys have done any less damage.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. I mean, they all took the Morris Deese route. They looked to see what would be the path of least resistance, the most profitable, the easiest way to power, and they took it.
Well, see, the way I look at it is this. It doesn't matter how liberal you are. It doesn't matter how consonant your values are with the prevailing Jewish liberal position. You're still not safe because you're not Jewish. They're going to take you out, and they've taken Morris Deese out. I don't see anyone else.
Yeah, but as Morris Deese himself said, yeah, but you know, he founded the organization, co-founded it, I guess.
Well,
he himself said he hadn't tried a case in over 10 years. I mean, he was basically a figurehead. He made all of his money. He was a multimillionaire by direct mail fundraising.
Well, the way he got into that was he was working in the McGovern campaign. There were not a lot of takers for that job. That thankless job. Well, he got in there and got a hold of the Democratic Party's donor list, and that's what he built his fortune on. He took that with him and started making direct mail solicitations to those
people. Selling pots
and
pans. And anyway, Bill, final word to you, brother. It's been a great hour, a fast hour, a riveting hour. We're going to give the last few seconds this hour to you because me and Keith have another hour to go. Go, Bill.
Okay. Well, I just want to say I'm very impressed how you interject Christian principles into your show, and I guess you do that all the time. It's good that we have that. I don't know any other secular talk show that does this on such an adroit and artful basis, so I really appreciate that.
Well, Bill, we thank you for saying that. Of course, we don't consider ourselves, frankly, to be a secular show. We consider ourselves to be a Christian show, a pro-white show, a pro-Southern show, but Christianity is at the foundation of everything we do here at TPC. And thank you so much for noticing, by the way. You're a good friend, a good man, Bill Johnson of the American Freedom Party. We'll be back in the third hour. Thank you, Bill.
Okay, goodbye. Thanks.